Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Said some hour two recap of the weekend type of headlines. Give them to me, Sam.
Thanks, John. We have got some commitment watch this afternoon for the Tennessee Vols as top 100 wide receiver, four-star out of Memphis, Redorius Jackson. He will announce his commitment today at 1 p.m. Eastern, choosing between Tennessee, Auburn, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. Got a little Wilt Fong prediction over the weekend for him. So, you know, hoping to keep an eye on that one as Tennessee is hoping to keep the wide receiver pipeline going and secure an in-state commitment here.
A Fonger bang?
A little Fonger bang, yeah.
97.4% on threes. Prediction machine.
Yeah.
Is it down to us and who? Like,
Auburn,
realistically?
Auburn, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss.
Okay. So a Memphis, Tennessee kid. So with a couple of the Western SEC teams and then the in-state Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
A four-star on three. A three-star on Rivals. A three-star on 247. Although.
Sounds like a guy who's kind of been rising the ranks late.
I was going to say, like, I give Tennessee's staff the benefit of the doubt when it comes to evaluating guys. It seems like they have done a good job of finding guys before they rise. Yeah. And developing that loyalty and getting them on campus. And also, like, I feel like they've done a good job at wide receiver, finding guys one way or the other. So, do your thing.
Keep recruiting.
It'd be nice to say, like, hey, in-state kid, but it's Memphis, so, like, it's not, you know, a foregone conclusion for sure.
Getting those kids is nice, though, because I feel like, you know, an Ole Miss snagging a Memphis kid is almost just as much, like, in-state to them as
it is
for
get it,
us.
They get in-state tuition, yeah. Like, right? Like, Memphis kids get to go to Ole Miss and get considered in-state tuition, so.
They just keep we talked about it last week. We just keep stacking receivers, man.
Yeah.
And we don't want to lose to Kiffin.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
Kevin wants a guy, and we want a guy. I hope we get the guy.
Mm-hmm. An electric finish at Talladega yesterday. I'm not going to act like I'm the biggest NASCAR expert in the world, but when I saw it come across my timeline as a highlight, this fired me up. I had a buddy that was at Talladega. He said it was an electric finish. He was sitting there front row. Tyler Reddick takes it home after a crash here on the final lap, basically. He is races for Michael Jordan's 2311 racing team. So Jordan was there at the event, saw his team secure a win.
Hold on. So he races for Michael Jordan's car. Did Bubba get fired? What's Bubba racing now? I thought Bubba was in the Jordan car. Are they both in Jordan cars?
Maybe.
Surely they're both not in Jordan cars.
Too many NASCAR questions.
No, I understand, and it's kind of me just thinking out loud. Bubba Wallace car sponsor. Let's see what it is.
This may be.
Says he's driving the Air Force car now.
Okay.
23 team Bubba Wallace. So he's still 23 racing. Okay, I guess he just drives. Okay. Okay.
I would assume you can have multiple races.
No, you can. Yeah, you can. The owners have multiple teams. Yeah. I guess I thought that he was actually having the Jordan like car, but I guess that's dumb. I don't watch NASCAR either.
It was cool after the fact. I was kind of looking at the stuff, and you saw, you know, Michael Jordan and pit row like celebrating with the kids, with Reddick's kid. Like he was holding them up. He was like, "You gonna celebrate?" And he was like, "Yeah." And
that's pretty cool.
Jordan was talking to his whoever is like his pilot, and he was like, "We're gonna get wasted on this plane back, man."
So now he is without a doubt more successful as a NASCAR owner than he was as an NBA owner.
Absolutely. I think you can 100% say that. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. How about that?
I got no other NASCAR thoughts. I don't watch.
No.
Those are more than I have.
Mm-hmm. Some news in the PGA Tour here. The RBC Heritage is resuming probably as we speak, was slated to start back at 8 a.m. this morning. Scottie Scheffler just continues to dominate golf. It is unbelievable. He holds a five-shot lead right now through 15 holes. So we'll go ahead and say that Scottie Scheffler has won the RBC Heritage. I can't imagine that Scottie Scheffler drops a shot, let alone five of them. It's honestly a shame. Like, we're getting amazing leaderboards here in golf, and Scottie Scheffler's just killing it.
Crushing it. Like, and if he wins this one, which seems extremely likely, it's an elevated purse. So after I was reading some statistic, over the course of like 44 days, he will have won more than John Rahm did last year as the top money winner for the whole season.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's also – I saw his caddy has earned more money this year than Rory McIlroy has.
Justin Thomas, I think, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Justin Thomas has sucked. Like, at least – I guess Rory still does – gets credit for being a top player in the world. Thomas doesn't right now. But, yeah, the caddy's right there, right ahead of Rory, I think. This win for Scheffler is – I don't want to say as impressive as the Masters, but, like, to win – after I assumed you celebrated all week after winning the Masters.
It's Terminator stuff.
Yeah, like, he's a machine. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. He's Terminator stuff.
And his wife's still expecting, right?
Yeah. Can she go have a damn baby so we could get some different golf winners? Although, like, I want to see if he can, you know, I know no one's going to complete the Grand Slam. Like, I know no one's going to win, you know, three after the Masters and win all four in the same year. I know that's probably not going to happen because the fields are too good now. But I want to see Scotty try.
Somebody posted on X, they showed a picture of a recliner with a pillow saying, yes. this is what will break your streak, the daddy chair.
Yep. And it's just like, you have so many players here that are just right in the mix. I mean, you've got DeGala, Wyndham Clark, Cantlay, Justin Thomas, like Patrick Rogers, Ludvig Åberg, like all these guys are at 16 under, 15 under, 14 under. It's a bunch leaderboard at the top with like 10, 11, 12 guys, but you just got Scottie Scheffler who just runs away with everything.
Well, since you're on the subject, and since we are an ally here, you got to give a shout out to Nelly Korda too.
Yeah.
Who I just heard of for the first time yesterday.
She's one of my winners of the weekend. So
she was one of mine too.
Fine.
That's okay, guys. Well,
she's just going to win.
You can still put them in there. But yeah, like, this, honestly, yesterday's the first time I've ever heard of her.
No, she's dominant.
She won her fifth straight last year. She won her fifth straight tournament.
Yeah. No, she is unbelievable. She's the Scottie Scheffler of women's golf.
And I wish I would have known about her because you could still get her at 5-1 to win this tournament coming into the weekend. And she cashed. Maybe just keep betting on her and Scottie until they lose.
Yeah. This was the first, major, I guess, of the women's season, and it was a very similar storyline as Scottie Scheffler kind of headed into the Masters. It was like a 4-1, 5-1 favorite, and it's just like field versus Nelly Korda, like who's going to win, you know, and so much pressure is on their shoulders, and they just step up and deliver every single time.
Anything else?
Yeah, I just closed out of my thing here, my bad. The NCAA officially approved some of the rules that we've been talking about for a while here. 2-minute warning, helmet communication, that is official for FBS football this year. I'm all here for a 2-minute warning. I kind of like the 2-minute warning. I think we kind of – whenever it comes to me in college football, I always want it.
I don't like it.
No?
Nah, I mean, it's fine. It's not like it ruined the game for me or anything, but, like, I liked just the –
keep it running.
Yeah. I like it when they kind of differentiate between the, you know, NFL and college. I don't want the uniform rules.
Kirby was saying that the exact opposite. The intent is to get a little closer to what the NFL has done.
And that's fine. Like, I understand if that's their goal. I'm just saying I don't necessarily like that.
You don't want to mix the two.
Yeah, I prefer the NFL to college, but, like, I like that college is a little different. I feel like the players have plenty of time without the 2-minute warning. Like, I've never watched a 2-minute drill and thought, man, these guys need more time. Unless I'm watching like Air Force or Navy, try to get down the field like just running the ball. Yeah, like any modern offense, 2 minutes with the clock stopping after first downs and out of bounds. Like, that's plenty of time in college football. Like, you have 3 possessions in that amount of time sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever, get your TV timeouts. If you could just lock in this guaranteed 2-minute TV timeout and it leads to maybe just two fewer throughout the rest of the game, that's a big win. It's not going to happen. But if they did, like, hey, instead of having two, let's just make this one extra special and charge more money, I would sign up for that. But otherwise, like, I don't know what they're really accomplishing in terms of college football. Other than, I guess, if you're trying to get the ball back, that adds a new wrinkle into, like, running the clock out.
True, true.
Doing the math there and getting that extra time out, like, maybe.
It's a pretty rare occurrence, though.
Sure, but, like, maybe that's an extra wrinkle in terms of defense is trying to get the ball back. Getting an extra time out. Okay. That makes games a little bit more interesting.
A little more gamesmanship. Last thing I had was Arch Manning's spring game performance, but I don't know if y'all even care about that.
Can I make a comment about that?
Sure.
It just felt like the sports centers of the world and everybody were so thirsty to get something that looks good for Arch Manning. I mean, 75-yard pass, and it was like there's no defense, man. It was just like
it was a dime, though.
It was.
That's what you have to say when all these spring game highlights. It's like, oh, he's 15 yards open. It's like, oh, he's right on target.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was, yeah. Passes looked pretty, but it was not like surgical precision, you know, in-game circumstances to me. That's all.
I took it away is that, like, they were really trying to give him a full game stat line. Like, yeah. 19 of 25, 355 yards and three touchdowns.
That was them trying to throw him a bone for sure. Like that was them trying to make, I don't want to say like him not transfer because I don't know where he's at mentally or whatever, but it's like trying to get him some confidence and get him, you know, feeling good as he heads into the rest of the offseason as a backup.
Like, I feel like Tennessee could have done that last year with Nico if they really wanted to.
Well, yeah, but, like, as a freshman, there's less pressure. But, like, especially for Arch, like, who had such a bad spring game last year, the highlights were so bad for him. Yeah, and, like, everyone's, like, it just fueled the narrative of, like, hey, man, if his last name was Jones, he's a 3-star. But since he's Manning, like, they're making him a 5-star. Like, he looked awful in the spring last year. So, like, redemption from that perspective, I think, probably mattered to them and probably mattered to Arch. But also, like, yeah, like, you talked about Nico last year. As a freshman, sure, but, like, Nico, like a top-ranked quarterback, is now in line to start year two. So you don't really have to worry about his stat line in the spring game this year because you know who the starter is. Arch, on the other hand, not even close to being a starter. Maybe not even their backup quarterback. So, yeah, you need to really throw him a bone and make him feel like he's progressing.
I would argue that Nico's pass to Ethan Davis in last year's spring game was better than any of those Arch bombs this weekend.
Again, I don't know why you're hating on Arch. He's out there doing the best he can, Bob. But no, the Ethan Davis pass from Nico, you say, was as good as any of Arch's passes. I mean, that was as good as any passes in all of football last year.
That's what I'm saying.
It was an NFL throw. Like, it was a Sunday throw.
Yeah.
Man, that got me excited seeing that throw. Then we get to see it again the rest of the year. But I've moved on. Ryan Schumpert, little RTI read and react. Coming up next, is he good to go?
Yeah, he's slated for about 8:20. So, yeah, we're on target.
I'll call him 2 minutes early. He'll be all right.
He's a responsible guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sam's out of headlines. I got nothing else about Arch Manning. If you want to make fun of Eli, the floor is yours.
Can't squeeze much more out of the weekend.
Yeah, like Peyton, I saw like an American Red Cross commercial where he's asking for blood.
I told Sam in the break leading into this, I was like, I was looking at his headlines. I go, good job on the headlines, because there wasn't much really besides, you know, the stuff we're talking about in bigger, meatier segments. So it happens sometimes. So
I got to be honest, I'm always underwhelmed by Sam's headlines. I feel like there's plenty of meat on the bone. Yeah, Dame scored 35 last night in the first half.
I'm stealing content from the other parts of the show. Right.
Zoe got I don't know how to say this guy's name. I'm not trying to do this. I respect your heritage and your culture. Zhou Gaonu? I don't know. He was the first ever Chinese F1 driver, and they were in China. They were in Shanghai, and, like, he has his big moment, and F1's making global history. And I was like, you know what? We're tearing down stereotypes of Asians being bad drivers. Nuh-uh, look at Zhou. Look at Zhou. And the F1's growing now, international, even more so, global. That was the headline worthy thing.
I think our fan base probably likes NASCAR a little more than F1.
Well, if you throw I don't know if that's true. I mean, our fan base, sure. But I think we have plenty of people that still like F1.
Sure.
F1's still a big deal. I don't know if their momentum's still as hot as it was a couple years ago, but it's worth a mention.
But it's Talladega.
Yeah.
I know, but it's the first Chinese F1 driver ever, and he raced in his home.
Who won the race? Verstappen?
Probably. Yeah, I think so, actually.
That's the problem with F1 at this point.
He's the Scotty Scheffler of F1.
Yeah, it's rough. They need some diversity in terms of who wins.
Well, Sam already beat me to it, but like, yeah, the same with golf. You still give Scotty a mention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about, you know, Kelly, or what was her name?
Nelly.
Nelly Korda, yeah. There's a K after that.
One of the announcers made the exact same mistake on the men's broadcast.
She's won five in a row, so I don't know why you guys are hating on Max.
Was there some UFC thing? You usually report on UFC stuff.
No, there's no UFC. No pay-per-view.
They usually take a week off in between pay-per-views, right? Then we'll get to probably a fight night this upcoming week. I think that's kind of how their schedule usually goes.
Yeah.
Will Ospreay and Daniel Bryan, people are saying one of the best wrestling matches of all time last night. I didn't watch, but that's what people are saying in my wrestling circles. I don't watch the other brand. I got the WWE is enough for me. It's plenty.
This wasn't WWE?
No, there's another one.
Okay.
The family that owns the Jacksonville Jaguars started a rival company like 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah.
A loser just like the Jags?
It's kind of like the people who were mad at WWE liked it because for a while, like, WWE was really stagnant whenever Vince, the old man, was still in charge. Yeah. So, like, it had a lane 4 or 5 years ago, and it's still got enough of a lane now where people, like, pay attention to it. But, like, now that WWE's got its stuff together, then, like, yeah, it's a loser like the Jaguars. And, like, the guy who runs it is the Khan's son.
Okay.
It's Tony Khan. Khan's his name, and, like, he runs it and is really bad at it, and like everyone's always making fun of him because he's just like basically a fan. And his dad's like a trillionaire. That's like, here you go, son, run a wrestling company. And so he's just like, he's doing it just because he's a fan, basically. So it leads to a lot of bad stories for them. Yeah, that's all I got.
Okay,
all right, that was enough stalling for Shumpert. Now maybe he can wake up and stretch or whatever we were doing to get him to 8:20. Ryan Shumpert, RTI Read and React, coming up next. The segment's brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff take pride in listening to and communicating with their patients to help them make the best decisions about their dental health, from routine cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, cosmetic like Invisalign, veneers, implants. They could do it all at Knoxville Smiles. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. I smile every time I talk to my friend Ryan Shumpert, Rocky Top Insider. Ryan, top of the morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
I just told you I'm smiling. I like talking to you. I missed you at the golf tournament. Rick Butler was holding it down for Team Rocky Top Insider while you were working. How did that make you feel?
I heard that he threw one to about 2 feet on the first hole, and I was told not to ask about any of his shots after that. So I feel like he did a pretty good job, and certainly I got to cover a pretty fun baseball series up in Lexington.
Ryan, I saw one of his tee shots. I'm just not going to comment.
The first shot's all that Rick wants to talk about, Bob. That's it. The first shot, he put one within 2 feet and got the guys started. It's his teammates' fault for not carrying that momentum. I got your back, Rick. And you're right, Ryan. You got to watch a really good baseball series this weekend. Your biggest takeaway from it is what?
I think it's probably the fact that, you know, Drew Beam and Nate Snead have been – by far Tennessee's best pitchers this season with A.J. Russell injured. And really neither of them pitched very well this weekend. I mean, Drew Beam kind of had a classic bad Drew Beam outing where it wasn't that bad, and he was able to grit through and get into the middle of the game, and certainly he got a bunch of run support before he even took the mound. And then Nate Snead probably had his worst weekend of the year when you talk about two appearances on Friday and Sunday that didn't go very well. So for a Tennessee pitching staff that has had a lot of questions and has had some struggles this year, for their two best guys to not have very good weekends, and for Tennessee to go on the road in a top five series and win, especially after losing the first game, That feels like that says a lot about this team, and it says, one, how good this offense is, and this offense can carry them against good teams, even good teams on the road in more pitcher-friendly ballparks. And I think it also showed that Tennessee does have a couple other pitchers that are starting to find their rhythm. And obviously, as Tennessee tries to piece everything together on the mound, I think that's really encouraging because I anticipate at least that Sneed and Beam will get back to being really good here down the stretch.
Well, I was going to say the Drew Beam game you described seems like it's the Drew Beam game that we just kind of always get. It seems like that's just kind of who he is at this point, at least so far this season. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably been the most common outing. I mean, the last 2 weeks against LSU and Auburn, he was really good in both those outings. But for the most part, you know, Beam's not going to be just a dominant ace. He's just going to be a guy you feel pretty confident can get you 5, 6, 7 innings given two or three runs. But he's had a few starts this year where he's been better than that.
Hey, Ryan, good morning. Sticking on the pitching tip here, I was talking a little bit earlier about it was the first time I'd seen some extensive action from Aaron Combs, and man, did he look good on Saturday. And you wrote a good piece on the site about this too. I mean, that's a huge development if he can deliver those kind of performances on a consistent basis, right? It kind of changes the complexion of that staff.
It does, and he's a guy that Tennessee was expecting a lot from this year. I mean, Tennessee had so much depth last year that he was kind of a fringe bullpen piece. I mean, there was clearly trust in him. He came in, I think, the 7th inning or maybe 6th inning in Hattiesburg with a runner on 3rd and 1 out, and he just faced one batter but got a big strikeout, and obviously that showed the confidence they had in him. And he was a guy that I thought was going to be one of the top 2 or 3 arms out of the bullpen this season when he came back, but just the first two-thirds of the year, I guess, to this point in the season, things weren't really going that way for him. He was struggling. He was having some command issues, a lot of walks. But really, Auburn in a game, the Friday night opener that Tennessee lost, and he came in when Tennessee was down and pitched really well, and that felt like kind of a sneaky good sign, even though it was a game that Tennessee didn't win, and it was a game that you left with a lot of pitching questions and concerns because A.J. Causey got hit so hard early in that game. But it feels like that was the starting off point for him, and he was dominant in 2 innings on Saturday last weekend against LSU, and then just shut the door on Saturday in both the longest outing of his career and his career high in strikeouts. So it feels like Tennessee's finally starting to get from Aaron Combs what they expected to get from him before the season, and that's just huge. As, you know, we talk about a bullpen and a pitching staff that's trying to piece things together and find enough answers to supplement a really, really good offense that could play really, really deep into the postseason.
My next question is simple, and it's actually just a statement. Christian Moore.
I mean, that guy, when he gets on these tears, it's just unbelievable. And I know Charlie Condon and Jack Caglione are just insanely good, and they're probably better than him overall. But when he gets on these tears like he has a couple times, he did it last weekend in the Clemson Regional, he did it last season at Georgia, and now these last 2 weeks he's just been unfathomably good. And to the last 2 games of that series, to have 4 home runs, to have multiple doubles, to have 8 hits, it was just the latest example of it. When he gets hot, there's not hardly a tougher out in the entire country than him, and boy did he do it at a big time for Tennessee yesterday. And I would even point to the 3rd inning home run. I mean, I think it's easier to point to the stuff at the end of the game because it, you know, kind of came in a clutcher moment. But Tennessee couldn't do anything against Mason Moore in the first 5 innings of the game. They had 3 base runners, but they got 2 runs on a Christian Moore opposite field homer, which it didn't even really feel like he got into his lower body. Just showed extreme power on it, and that was enough to kind of keep Tennessee in striking distance. So when that big 6th inning came, they were able to take the lead, but just an unbelievable weekend for Moore.
Coming out of the weekend, what are your thoughts on Kentucky's baseball team?
I mean, I find them a little bit annoying, I guess, you know, with all the chants and stuff. But, you know, I didn't necessarily know if they were a number 3 team in the country entering the weekend. I probably feel like they're not the number 3 team, but I feel like they are a top 10 team. I feel like they are good. They play that small ball brand, but they play it really well, and they execute it at a high level, and they have a handful of really good bats. They play good defense. The pitching staff is good. I think more than anything, the pitching staff just ran into a buzzsaw in Tennessee's lineup. I think Kentucky's still good, and they're going to be a team that's going to compete to host the Super Regional, but it'll be interesting to see how they do the next 4 weeks of the season against a pretty hard schedule to close things out in SEC play.
As a TV viewer, we were talking about this earlier, it felt to me like it was almost like a regional type vibe. I mean, it was really entertaining baseball, mainly because we won the series, and I'm not going to hit you too hard that you picked Kentucky to win the series, but seriously, I it felt really cool from a TV viewing perspective. You were there, I mean, and the place was sold out. It had to be pretty electric. I mean, were you feeling any of that?
Definitely, and just the back and forth of the weekend. I mean, I feel like it's kind of an overused phrase. It's kind of like a Jimmy Dykes, this is a Sweet 16 game comment, but people love to say that this feels like a Super Regional, and it feels like this one kind of did. Joe Healy, who covers SEC baseball for D1 Baseball, said the same thing. Tony Vitello said the same thing post-game. So it had a big weekend vibe with two programs that don't really like each other. And you mentioned the TV aspect. I think that was almost the most discouraging thing of the weekend when you talk about college baseball and trying to grow it. And none of those games were on TV, the streaming broadcast and the announcers. Obviously, I didn't watch it, but heard a lot of complaints from a lot of different people about the lack of energy, and certainly a series that had so much reason for energy and excitement on the call.
Any other baseball thoughts, Bob, that you want to get from Ryan? I feel like we've hit it pretty good. I want to move to basketball if possible.
Yeah, I'd like to move to basketball too, so yeah, I'm good.
Ryan, where are we at with the basketball team right now?
Well, I think the big development, we talked about it last week, no big man names for Tennessee popping up in the portal. Well, the name popped up yesterday with Felix Okpara from Ohio State entering, and Tennessee very quickly involved in that one. I think at this point I would even call them the favorite in that one, and looks like the guy that will replace Jonas Adu and Tobey Awaka on this roster. Obviously, Tennessee has to close, but a rising junior, started 34 games for Ohio State last year, and a guy that I think is a really good blend of some of the things that both Adu and Awaka can do.
He has some Tennessee ties as well, right? Played high school ball in Chattanooga, was former teammates with Cam Carr. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. Played with Cam Carr and Julian Phillips, both at Link Academy. I believe went to Hamilton Heights for a year or two before he went to Link Academy down in Chattanooga. His little brother's still there. His host family, his host family when he was down in Chattanooga, is Tennessee fans. So a lot of connections here. Rod Clark also has a bunch of connections at Link Academy. So a bunch of connections between Okpara and Tennessee.
I was talking to someone who we talked about a little earlier, has ties to the Ohio State program, and said, you know, a little bit disappointed from the standpoint with Aaron Bradshaw coming in. There was hope that maybe they were going to even talk about going with a two big lineup. He's definitely a little bummed, quite a bit bummed about Okpara leaving. From the standpoint of the fact that Tennessee may be getting him, that gave me some, you know, real optimism to hear such good stuff about this kid.
No doubt. I think he was a guy that Ohio State really wanted to keep. It was kind of just classic 2024 basketball in the portal. I mean, he announces that he's coming back, and then they get Kentucky transfer Aaron Bradshaw, and then he starts rethinking things and decides to enter. But a really good defensive anchor down there. I mean, his block percentage, I think, was ranked 10th in the country last year, even higher than Jonas, who is obviously a good rim protector against driving guys, and then, you know, just a good kind of catch and dunk, a good lob threat down low. Not a super developed offensive game at this point, but I think when you look at Tennessee having JP Estrella, who's a talented big man scorer, and you look at Tennessee's optimism of being able to what they're going to be able to add to this roster and kind of some of the scoring threats, I think that you kind of live with that, and I think he fits Tennessee's roster really, really well, probably even better than Waka at this point, in my opinion.
So on that note, with this day and age of there's eyes on you everywhere, right? You know, there's the photo floating around of Tobe spotted in Phoenix, Arizona yesterday. I mean, and given what we know with the developments with Akpara, I don't know. Based on what Rick was saying on Thursday and no movement, we're of the mind here. I know, you know, we're just handicapping, but it feels like Tobe might be that game might be over. Do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's trending that way. I mean, I think it's a situation where if Tobe were to say he's coming back at this very moment, that Tennessee would take him, and the Akpara situation probably wouldn't materialize. But given the fact that he's in Arizona, given the fact that he doesn't seem to be making or be in any sort of huge rush to make a decision, makes it sound like, and the fact that Tennessee feels like they're in a good spot with Akpara makes it feel like that ship is kind of sailing. But as always with the transfer portal stuff changes pretty frequently.
Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. Anything you're working on this week?
No, nothing out of the ordinary. We'll have everything covered on the transfer portal front in basketball. Anything that pops up in the transfer portal front in football, the Jackson kid from West Tennessee committing this afternoon, Tennessee, Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, if he chooses the Vols, we'll have stuff out on that. And then obviously plenty of Tennessee baseball stuff, to Catamount, so Western Carolina on Tuesday, and then a weekend series against Missouri, a chance to rake up some wins and potentially get another sweep at home as Tennessee kind of tries to cement itself as a national seed and maybe even make a run at SEC championship.
Hey, Ryan, on the way out, one more thing on basketball. We talked for a moment in the previous segment about Dwayne Brown. Any thoughts there on him? I mean, it seems like a good maybe developmental get for the Vols, but any thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, any sort of prep big man, most of them at least are some level of a development. You see a lot less prep big men come in and play and be really effective right away. But a guy Tennessee likes a lot, I think his physicality is something that's really impressive, and I think a really good get for Tennessee to kind of kickstart their 25 class.
Appreciate your time as always, Ryan. Talk to you next week.
Sounds great. See you guys.
Thank you, Ryan.
Great job by you, Sam. Hard-hitting questions as always.
What else do you want me to ask about the baseball team?
You don't have to be defensive. I was giving you a compliment. You did a great job. You the volume levels were great. It was a compliment, bro. Take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Just take it. It was a compliment. We'll switch gears. We'll talk some NBA playoffs. Sam, you watch any hockey? You got any hockey updates for me?
Watch a little hockey.
I went to bed. The Preds were up 2-1. I wake up. They lost 4-2. What the hell happened there?
Yeah. It all unravels in the latest part of the game when you're staying up late, and then you just go to bed pissed off.
What time did the game end?
Like 12:45.
Were you up the entire time? Are you a Preds, like, big – you consider yourself a Preds fan?
I've done a bad job, I would say, this year in the regular season, but, like, now that, you know, we're in the playoffs, yeah, I'm getting locked in. I used to be a huge Preds guy, absolutely.
So halfway through the third period, Nashville was up 2-1, and you gave up two goals, am I reading this right, in 12
like,
seconds?
Yeah, in, like, 15 seconds.
The hell happened there?
Yeah. No idea. Crowd got into it, go down. That was just such a brutal end of my night. I was feeling so good. I was like, I had a good weekend. My team's going to cap it off with a midnight win, get a 1-0 lead on the road.
Soros, bad game, huh? Kind of stuck. I saw everyone mad about the first goal.
The first goal was, yeah. Yeah, he should have had that.
It can't be too good if you gave up two goals in 15 seconds either in the third period. But, like, yeah, everyone was mad about the first goal. I did see that.
Yeah, he wanted that one back for sure.
Okay, and there's your Tennessee sports update. Ryan Shumpert handled the college. Sam gave you the Preds update. We'll talk some NBA playoffs coming up. Bob, you got anything to add about the hockey?
Didn't watch it. So, there's my update.
Do that hockey.
Feels weird that they're in the Western Conference having to play like on the West Coast that late at night, but I guess that's just,
we always get drawn with those Canadian teams that you got to play at, you know, at 10 o'clock at night and stuff like that. It sucks.
At least you got all of America rooting for you. Don't let us down. Mm-hmm. We'll talk some basketball next.
A brand built into
This segment is brought to you by SM Athletics. SM Athletics did a great job. The crew out there helping us with the fan run open. Shout out to our champion, Tim. Shout out to my guy, Trevor, who was helping. Helping with everything. Helping with the gift bags, the swag bags. Helping with drinks.
He had that enormous cooler riding around with him. I was like, man, watch those turns. I can speak from experience.
A real glue guy performance from my guy, Trevor, at SM Athletics. So shout out to him. If you need any merchandise, if you have any embroidery or prints, equipment, uniform needs, our friends at SM Athletics will take care of you. And they'll do it with a smile and top-notch customer service. Great products at a fair price. When they say it is done, it's done right and on time every time. Don't chance it with unreliable mega stores or online orders. Give SM Athletics a call today at 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Again, if you have any uniform equipment, screen print, or embroidery needs, you can trust SM Athletics. All right, Sam, how interested were you in the NBA playoffs this weekend?
I watched a good – like, I probably watched half of most games.
Okay.
I don't think I finished, like, many full games, though.
Okay.
But I caught a lot of it.
Enough to watch. I'm like, okay, I'll turn it to hockey. I'm going to watch Scottie Scheffler. Yeah. Bob, what was your big takeaway from the opening weekend? Because I love the opening week off. When you get – four games a day, just game after game after game. I love it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It helped to also have Tennessee baseball going on at the same time. So I really enjoyed the sports weekend. Bob, what was your big takeaway? And was it just the Pacers laying an egg?
Well, I don't even want to talk about that. That was horrible.
Dame time.
And that series now goes from a toss-up, in my opinion, to Bucks and five. The Pacers blew their opportunity without Giannis there, and there's talk he might be back for game three. So I just very disappointing. It just felt like the stage was too big for them. They looked a little scared to me, honestly.
That's what y'all brought me here for, said Dame Lillard as he scored 35 first half points right on the very overrated Tyrese Halliburton's head. Just
yeah, a lot on Nembhard too. He was Then they started yapping at each other, and
can't say much when somebody's dropping 35. Like,
I know,
and a
that's
half.
What I'm yeah, saying. It's like walk away,
take the L.
God,
take it
walk
on
away. For me, the biggest takeaway was we've talked about him before. I think we're all fans here. Anthony Edwards, dude, special man.
He's so sick.
Oh my God! And I loved talk about yapping. I mean, it seemed like he was. It was kind of a healthy back and forth, I think, with him and Durant. You know, you saw the video maybe of him pounding his chest after lighting up a three with Durant in the vicinity, saying, you know, it's me and Durant. They cut away him smiling, just because Edwards has said all along Durant's like his idol. You know, growing up that was like his favorite player. So just when I thought Phoenix might come in and take Minnesota out at series, and it's still a seven-game series, I get it, but boy, that was a statement by Minnesota, and namely by Edwards.
No, Edwards, my big takeaway is like the young stars kind of, I know that's not Edwards' first taste in the playoffs, but I think it's his first taste in the playoffs as the unquestioned best player on the team. I think the last couple of years and last go-arounds, they've kind of been pretending that's Carl Anthony Towns' team, but I think now, like, everyone knows it's Ant's team. And you saw him put the team on his back. And, yeah, like, Durant's smiling. They had a good back and forth. It was kind of funny. I did get tickled seeing the highlights and watching the trash talk. And it's all the Anthony Edwards show. And at the end of the game, it's like 33 points. And, like, I didn't see one Kevin Durant highlight. And it's like 31 for Durant. It's like,
yeah.
So, like, as Ant was lighting him up, I guess Durant was giving it back because he scored 33. But, yeah, that was Edwards, like, the crowd chanting MVP moment, and he gets to feel good. And it's a long series, so, you know, don't shoot your shots too fast. You got to save some. You got to go out and win on the road or at least be able to do that three more times at home. So Edwards answered the bell, and I thought that in the nightcap, the last game, a similar situation in Oklahoma City, who isn't the best team in the West despite being the one seed. Like, I don't think anyone thinks they're actually winning the West. New Orleans, you know, gave them all they could handle, but it was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander down the stretch, hit a jumper to tie it with a minute and a half left, and then a three-point play to win it at the end of the game. I thought he had his moment as well. So Edwards and Shai Gilgeous, the two young superstars that are budding, both come through for their teams.
Yeah, and I would say kind of a sneaky good performance too. I just saw the statistic this morning that for Oklahoma City, Chet Holmgren, had 15 points, 15 boards, and 5 blocks. They said that's the first time that's happened in the playoffs since Shaq.
15-11 and 5.
Yeah. So, but it definitely got overshadowed by SGA. And you kind of nailed this one with New Orleans. It'll be interesting. Has there been any word on when, if Zion is back at all for this series? Because this thing could be really interesting if he was back.
I think it's going to be interesting even if he's not back. I don't think necessarily – I don't think New Orleans has it in them to win 4 of the next 6 without him. I think they really blew their chance last night. They should have stolen that game. Then it would have been an actual, you know, coin flip of a series even without Zion. But no, I haven't seen any updates. I know they're kind of expecting him back, but in terms of timeline, who knows? Who knows with Zion? But yeah, if they had Zion, I think they would just they beat the Thunder. It's kind of the way that feels. But yeah, hopefully I made you a little money on Friday night. I told you, Sam, to take the Pelicans over the Kings. I told you. Got off to a little bit of a rough start. You're probably like, oh, John doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. But then the size took over, and they blew them out. And followed it up last night. I thought it was a big spread at 9, too. Like I think New Orleans has got a bunch of good basketball players. I think that's going to be a dogfight of a series.
Took it blindly and trusted it. Felt like Boo Booey back in March. That's what I had to remind myself of.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, good. I'm glad we got that working. It's like, hey, you know, you gave me a winner, I give you a winner, mm-hmm. and now we're even.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What do you think of Nuggets-Lakers? It felt to me like Denver looked back in, just for one game, but looked like they were back in championship form.
I don't know. I don't know what I thought, because the Lakers look just as good as them, if not better than them in stretches. But then, yeah, Denver just flips the switch. They had a big run in the second quarter to go from, I think, 12 down to tied before LeBron hit a parking lot three at the end of the first half. And then they did it again at the end of the third quarter, where the Lakers went from up 2 to down 10, I think, going into the fourth quarter, or down maybe 11 going into the fourth quarter. And the Nuggets went on a 12-13-0 run and buried them. To me, it just feels like the Lakers are probably kicking themselves. Like, man, it would have been great to get to play the Thunder, because I think they beat the Thunder. But instead, they're going up against a Nuggets team that it seems like they just can't beat. That was the 9th straight win for Denver over L.A.
I saw this stat. It says since they got Aaron Gordon in March 2021, the Nuggets have not lost a single regulation game against a Western Conference opponent when all 5 starters start and finish the game. They're 37-0.
That's an absurd stat. I hadn't seen that. It's crazy to me they haven't lost once. I guess Murray was out for a good chunk of that, you know, with an ACL. So I guess, you know, there's not as many games. So only 37 since March 21. Like, okay, like that. I guess that checks out. But no, I mean, like, they lost 2 to the Suns last year, I guess, with somebody out, maybe. I don't know. Like, the Suns did get them twice last year in the playoffs. I don't remember if anybody was out or not. But newsflash, the Nuggets are really, really good. And Jokic just makes it all look very easy. Now, I do think the Lakers are not going to be overwhelmed by Denver in this series. I do think they have a chance of extending the series. And I think Nuggets in 6 is what I said before the series. And I do think the Lakers got 2 wins in them. But you came out in the first half and LeBron was putting on a show. Like, that first quarter, I think he had 11-5-5 or something crazy like that, like, or maybe 11-5-3. LeBron was locked in, but then I think kind of ran out of gas a little bit, and then you're like, oh yeah, he's 39 and in altitude and having to do everything.
And the guy we were just talking about last week did not show up for them, D'Lo. They got to get more from him if they're gonna try to keep this series close, in my opinion.
Yeah, Russell had looked like the third person in a big three for much of the last, you know, second half of the season. But then, yeah, game one, it was like, oh, yeah, never mind. This guy is inconsistent and not really somebody you can rely on, as he went 6 of 20 and 1 of 9 from 3. Yeah, like the Lakers in general didn't shoot well from 3, especially if you remove LeBron and his 3 makes out of 5 attempts. They would be, what, 5 for 24? That ain't going to get it done. That ain't going to get it done.
Clippers win without Kawhi?
Yeah, I made a little money on that yesterday just because I don't think that Kawhi being out is a death sentence for them at home. That was the trend of the week. I mean, not to step on my winners and losers, but like no team in hockey and no team in the NBA playoffs won on the road this weekend. It was, I believe, if my calculations are correct, 14-0.
Wow.
For the home teams. Not every hockey series went off. I think there's still two game ones tonight, but the other six, all the home teams won. And then all 8 in the NBA. And if you go even back to the play-in tournament, like only one team has won on the road, and that was the Lakers against the Pelicans. All the other home teams won all the other play-in games. So home court advantage was back in a big way this weekend. And, yeah, the Clippers came out and really rode that wave in the first half. James Harden, 20 points in the first half. Looked really good. And then, you know, the Mavericks kind of settled in and realized, oh, wait, the playoffs have started. Let's lock in. And made a run in the second half. So, like, I do think the Mavericks probably come out of that game feeling okay about themselves.
I'm struck by how Westbrook has really kind of settled in and accepted his role, too. And that's a big deal for that team, I think.
Yeah, Westbrook, you know, him going out, that was also what happened, Sam. We've joked about me putting the curse on the Clippers by talking about Kawhi for MVP. But, like, right around that time, Westbrook went out, too, and their bench kind of fell apart because Westbrook's been a big energy guy for them in terms of that second unit and setting up plays and just playing with energy. And he was pretty good in the first half yesterday. And like you said, Bob has embraced his role and I think is a big asset for them.
Did you see the foul on Tatum? I mean, I think it was just in action. You know what I mean? It just happened. But, man, it did. If I was a Celtics fan, I'd hold my breath for a second there.
Brian Scalabrine on the post-game show, he does TV work for him. He just went out and basically called it dirty. Said Spo put the hit out. Like, he stopped short of saying that, but he's like, you're down 16, a minute and a half. Spolster calls a timeout, and then the next play out of timeout is Caleb Martin running full speed into Tatum and knocking him out of the air. And Tatum took a big spill, but to Tatum's credit, got up and was like, hey, you know, I'm a grown man. It's the playoffs. Let's shake it off. I'm going to go down here and shoot these free throws. I'm not going to let that bother me. I'm not going to lay on the floor and act like I'm hurt. He just got up and went back to it. It did seem a little borderline dirty. I won't go all the way and call it dirty, but it was definitely reckless.
Yeah,
to be flying in for a rebound like that. It was definitely reckless, but at the same time, if you're going to have your starters in up 16 with a minute 30 left, that's kind of what you run the risk of. I understand the playoffs, you want to finish the game, but like, I just always think back to Derrick Rose tearing his ACL in like a blowout of Philadelphia with like a minute left in that game and how that ruined this, you know, the Bulls' franchise and kind of ruined D. Rose's career. So I would maybe err on the side of caution, but
felt just like a Miami Heat classic, like game one, like, hey, this is what the series is going to be like type of thing.
But that makes it sound a little dirty though, right? Like if you're like, yeah, hey, we're going to try to send a message after you just kicked our ass for 46 minutes, we're going to let you know like, hey, we're not punks at least. Like to me, when you say that, that makes it sound a little dirty.
I think it was probably a little dirty.
Make them feel you after they just kicked your ass. Let's at least make Tatum get in the ice bath after the game. It's almost like what it seemed like.
Yeah, the only thing I saw was Martin right afterwards spun to him and went to help him up. That's the only reason I was led to believe it wasn't like a hit. You know what I mean? I just think it was aggressive and like you said, maybe a little reckless, but they're still, you know, again, minute and a half in the game, you're down 16. I guess if you're Miami, you're still trying to make something happen there and, you know, get the ball back, whatever.
But we call that covering your tracks, Bob.
Okay.
You knock somebody out of the air, like, oh, I'm sorry, let me pick you up.
It doesn't happen in the NBA, man. You know that. That's usually they'd walk away if there was intent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think Caleb Martin gets any credit for being a dirty player. But, like, if I'm a Celtics fan, I hate Caleb Martin. Not only did he knock Tatum out of the air, but, like, he also morphed into, like, an all-star last year. It's like they combined the power between Caleb and the other twin. They just morphed together.
Cody is the other one.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other one's not very good. I couldn't even think of his name. But, yeah, like, Cody and Caleb morphed together and just became a super player because, yeah, last year against Boston, I mean, in Game 7, Caleb Martin scored 27 points and grabbed 10 rebounds.
Yeah.
In Game 6, 21 and 15. Game 2, 25 points. Like, he averaged 19.3 points in that series just randomly and, you know, sent Boston home. So I'd already hate him, and now he's knocking Tatum out of the air. So emotions are going to be high for sure when it comes to him. You asked about Zion. Have we had any updates on Jimmy Butler? Because I think he's got less time to get healthy, and I'd imagine we're not going to see him in this series because I think this series is going to be four and done. I think the brooms are out, and Boston's going to cut the head off of the Miami Heat snake.
Yeah, haven't heard. I think Jimmy's probably – it sounded, last thing I'd heard was weeks. And,
yeah.
And
they ain't got weeks.
Now, in game one, you know, the guy who needs to fill some of that void, at least from a bucket-getting standpoint, is Tyler Hero, and he didn't have a D'Angelo Russell type game, but it was pretty close. 4-13 from the field, 3-9 from three. They need more from him. So I agree with you. I don't see that. It might be a gentleman's sweep at best, but I think it's going to be pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Brooms. I'll take the brooms. I'll take Boston just getting them out in four.
Cup of coffee on the way out.
Here you go. Here's a $15 cup of Jimmy Butler's coffee. Good luck. Hour one was in the books an hour ago. Hour two is in the books now. Hour three, we'll kick it off with some winners and losers of the weekend. Stick with us.
White Claw delivers a wave of pure refreshment.